Job World! It's your past first point guard and Trailblazers reporter Mike Richmond. You are listening to another episode of Locked On Blazers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, available wherever you get podcasts and also on YouTube. Why don't you make the show your first listen every single weekday, coming at you Monday through Friday. Make it your first listen. Tell your friends to do the same. It's Locked On Blazers, your team every day. In today's show, we got a couple things to talk about. One, the Blazers got thrashed by the Pelicans. It was one of their worst performances of the year. Probably not even in my top five worst performances of the year, all things considered. But they didn't play very well. We'll talk about that game. We'll find real silver linings from this one. And I don't even have to hunt for them. In the past, we've hunted for silver linings. These are easy to come by. I know right where they are. I'll point you to them. And then to close the show, we'll talk about the best turnarounds in NBA history. The Blazers are going to need to bounce back in a serious way next season. We'll look at the way other teams historically have bounced back from being straight up bad and see what if there are common denominators. And here's a hint: you got to add a bunch of really good players, or at least a singular talent. It really helps if you add an MVP. But let's do what we do. Fastest recap in the West. Blazers, they got it out of the way early, down 34-14 after one, down 58-35 after at halftime. Amazingly, not even their lowest scoring first half of the year. They scored 34 points back against Philly on January 19th with everybody playing, Dame and Ant and Jeremy Grant. They just stunk in that first half, made it a game late in the third quarter and still ended up losing to Philly. You know what happens. They've had some stinkers this year. This one was just a little bit different because the stinkers happened with a bunch of back end of the bench coming in, and it didn't get much better. Down 89-55 at the end of three. You know, the fourth quarter was a formality, but the whole damn. Sorry for the light swearing. Most of the final 40 minutes of this game were a formality. You're down 20 after one. The game's over. You score 35 points in the first half. The game's over. You do have to play in the second half. The Blazers did participate, but they lose 124-190. They did not score 115 points, so they did not have a chance to win. That's your fastest recap in the West. This was the game, the Blazers' second night of a back-to-back, and they kind of looked like it. I thought Shaedon Sharpe particularly, you know, he plays 36 minutes last night. He has scored 24, 24, and 29. He's got everybody's attention. He gets the Herb Jones assignments. Herb Jones, I think maybe his defensive star has diminished as maybe is not as bright as it was last year, but he's still a very good defensive player. He blanketed Shaedon Sharpe and made it tough on him. Sharpe had a scoreless first half, got in foul trouble with three fouls. You know, he just got the attention, and it's like, I don't know if a teenager who played 36 minutes last night and has never had the usage level he had in these type of games, just like, I don't know if Shaedon's ready for that, you know, for just the grueling challenge of being the best Blazers' best offensive player. Like, no fault of his, right? Like, sure, you're playing a team that wants to make the playoffs. They're putting a guy who could have made an all-defense team last year, like, did make an all-defense team, could have been even higher, like, up on those DPOY lists. He was not, but just a straight-up excellent perimeter defender. You get that assignment. It's like, the highest usage minutes of your career, the most minutes you've ever played in your career, the biggest turnaround back-to-back playing 24 hours later after the heavy usage load and heavy minutes load. Yeah, like, maybe you're not ready for it. The league is hard, and Sharpe looked like it. He finished with 12 points, 12 from Drew Eubanks. Keon Johnson led the way with 20 off the bench. Kevin Knox added 15, 11 for Cam Reddish, who was listed as questionable with a lumbar injury, with a back injury, played in the first half, did not come back in the second half. 7 for Nasir Little, who followed up one of his best games of the season with just a tough one. He was 3 of 10 from the floor. Matisse Thybulle quiet in his 14 minutes. He had 3. Ryan Arcidiacono had 3 as well. Did I get everybody? I believe I did. Jabari Walker had 7 in his 25 minutes. On the other side, 29 points for Brandon Ingram. Did not play in the fourth quarter. Blazers had nothing for him. 17 for CJ McCollum, 16 for Trey Murphy. Only hit 1 of 7 threes, but the one he hit aced it. 10 off the bench for Josh Richardson. The Pelicans spread it around. Everybody who played scored. It was heavy garbage time. I don't think we need to parse this one too much. Second night of a back-to-back, your best offensive player by a pretty wide margin is a teenager. Shaden Sharp might just straight up be their best player, period. I think Thybulle is, but it's like they're not the same level of player, right? It's like Thybulle's like more impactful in like, so the grander scheme of playing a basketball game, but he can't scale up to being what Sharp can scale up to being. Like, you can't give Thybulle the ball and ask him to go score 29 points. You can absolutely do that with Shaden Sharp. So, yeah, like I just think Sharp might be the straight up best player as a teenager. You're going to have rough nights. This was an absolute stinker. I didn't stick around to see the branded quote of the night that the Blazers social media team put out, but I hope it was something like, we were very bad. It's time to go. I'm glad we get to go home. Nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. They're supposed to lose. They did. They're more fun when the games are competitive. This game was not competitive. He didn't. If you missed it and you're listening to the podcast, Good. I'm glad you're here. You did not miss a particularly competitive or enjoyable game. A stinker. These stinkers are going to happen. It's okay. I mean, it's not okay. It's like extremely whack and boring. But this is what they're aiming for. Mission accomplished. As was famously declared once on an aircraft carrier. Let's talk about silver linings. I think there are real things to be to feel good about after this game. None of them really have to do with your Portland Trailblazers, but they sort of do. Join me for some obvious silver linings in the second segment. Before we get there, why don't we talk about FanDuel? It is a wonderful, straight up wonderful time to join FanDuel, because right now FanDuel is giving new customers a no sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's $1,000 back in bonus bets. If your first bet doesn't win, just go to FanDuel.com/lockedon, sign up today to claim your no sweat first bet. Then you can wager on everything from the money line to point spreads to which team will win the NCAA title or which team will just win a midweek NBA game, if you want to stick in our realm as well. All of that is on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So don't miss out on your shot at a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 when you join FanDuel today. Just go to FanDuel.com to sign up. Make every moment more with FanDuel. All right. Sometimes when I record these episodes, I have to go hunting for silver linings. I have to say, like, you know, I have, the last 2 years, the Blazers have been very bad. They've won a total of 6 games after the All-Star break in the last 2 seasons. That's 6 total. They're going to go something like 6-45. I can't even believe it. They're going to go something like 6-45 post-All-Star break the last 2 seasons. Outrageous. It's been, I mean, don't feel bad for me. I'm here by choice, but there have been times during the Blazers, let's call it unique approach to the end of the season, where I have had to search for silver linings, where I've had to say, like, okay, what am I going to talk about that isn't just doom and gloom? I'm not going to sit here and be like, Shaden Sharp's no good. He couldn't handle it. No, Nazir a little inconsistent, blah, blah, blah. Like, just Jabari Walker, not an NBA center. It's playing him out of position. He's probably moved the other way if they're going to play him a position. Probably moved to small forward from 4-3, not 4-5. But whatever. I don't want to doom and gloom you. Because, like, if you're watching the games, you're getting your gloom. But sometimes I'm BSing you. Like, I'm not. I try not to fake the funk on here, but sometimes I'm BSing you. Here's a thing you can feel good about. I found easy ones. These are easy. Easy silver linings. Honest to goodness silver linings. With this loss, with this absolute beatdown at the hands of the Pelicans that we don't need to talk about anymore, the Blazers do what they do, baby, and they keep on losing. They're 32-43. They're 32-43. A great record to have because it ties them with the Orlando Magic for the 5th best lottery odds in the league. The 5th best lottery odds. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? The 5th best lottery odds. Listen, it's pretty stupid. It's pretty stupid to sit here and say, like, they're losing, baby. But listen, they are losing, baby. It gives you, it just, it doesn't from 6 to 5, it doesn't dramatically increase your chances. It increases your chances something from something like 37.2% to 37.3%, but it greatly increases your chances of landing a top 6 pick. You now have a significantly higher chance of landing a top 6 as opposed to dropping to 7th, because just fewer teams, the way math works, fewer teams are going to be able to hop over you. You can get no worse than 9th if you're in 5th place. You just want to increase your odds. It's not dramatically different. Like falling from 6 to 8 is dramatically different, but following that 5 and 6 range, listen, you want to be there. I think that's the simplest way to put it. You want to be there. But here's the real silver lining. Like, you know the obvious stuff, right? You'd rather have 5th best odds better than the 6th best odds. Ring it up, baby. Ring it up, baby. But here's the actual real deal silver lining. The Magic are playing well. They're playing really well. They've won 3 straight. They've won 4 out of 5. They beat the Clippers, the hapless Wizards. They beat the Knicks. They beat the Nets. The Knicks and the Nets are straight up playoff teams that are going to get there. The Clippers are straight up playoff team that's going to get there. The Wizards are the team the Blazers unfairly get compared to. The Wizards wish they had the success of the Blazers. They go to bed each night wishing they could fail on the level the Blazers have failed over the last decade. I mean, fucking look it up. Excuse my language. Listen, the Magic are playing well. They're playing well. And they're not going to shut it down. They're not going to shut it down. Franz Wagner is a young guy they're going to play. Wendell Carter Jr. is a young guy they're going to play. Paolo Banchero is going to win rookie year. They're going to play him. Markel Fultz, you know, he's not going to sit at the end of the games. Cole Anthony coming off the bench, balling right now. They're not going to sit him. Jalen Suggs are not going to sit him. They're a young team playing out the string and going to go win games. If the Blazers do what they seem to be committed to doing, which is losing every game for the remainder of the season, very realistic chance the Blazers have won their last game. And this is it. They're just going to, that beeping you hear is them backing out of this season. Like, this is it. Like, get your Stuff the Magic Dragon dolls out. Get your old Lil Penny dolls out. And it's time to celebrate the Magic, because the Blazers because of the way the Magic have played the last week and because of what the Portland has committed to, they're going to catch them. And this is why you tolerate your team doing what the Blazers are doing. Like, please don't. Please, basketball gods and also Joe Cronin, don't put the Blazers back in this nonsense position for a third straight year. Don't do this. I'm not going to, like, what am I going to do, threaten you? It's like, I'm going to say mean stuff into this microphone. It's like, but please don't, because I really will be, I don't have a ton of patience for it now, but I'm having a good time. Not again. Get out of this madness. And if you do, 5th best lottery odds, go believe in yourself. Believe in yourself, and you can truly get there. You know, the Blazers move to something, can increase their chance of getting a top 4 pick by about 3% by finishing 5th, much higher chance of getting a top 7 pick. They put themselves in a much better position, and the Magic are not going to pull the plug. They're going to play their young guys down the stretch. That is an obvious silver lining, the 5th best lottery odds. Here's the other thing. Blazers are going to keep losing. The Kings lost tonight. They're holding on to the longest playoff drought in North American professional sports. They haven't made the playoffs in 16 years. They need one loss by the T-Wolves, who have now won 2 in a row. They need one win. Their magic number is 1 to get into the playoffs. 1. The Blazers' next 2 games are against the Kings. The Kings are going to absolutely thrash the Blazers. They're going to score like 250 points. It's the best offense in the league. When they get going and get going downhill, they're incredible. They get out in transition. The Blazers are awful in transition. They're going to score 145 against the Blazers. They're going to do it pretty easily. The only reason they won't score 145 is because they'll score 110 after 3 quarters and they'll get to call it good in the 4th. Blazers are going to keep on losing. Your silver lining is that the Orlando Magic are playing pretty darn well, and that the Kings are going to send the Blazers into two straight home games against the Kings, 2 straight beautiful misery moments against a Sacramento team that needs to win, that's going to, you know, is pushing for this. They've had an exceptional season. They're not going to let their foot off the gas. And they've, you know, and they stumbled at home tonight against the T-Wolves. So a little bit of revenge by just beating down a bad team. You don't have to worry about it. Then the Blazers are going to go on the road for an extended period of time and come back and play an afternoon game to close the season. Doesn't seem like a high energy second night of a back-to-back afternoon game on a Sunday, on Easter Sunday. Quite a way to finish the season. The Blazers are very likely, other than a game at San Antonio, probably the only bankable maybe win the Blazers have left in their schedule. And I'd say pretty good chance they could win that game. Like, they're, Spurs are also bad. That's it. Like, that's the one maybe victory left. Everybody else is going to beat this team. The Orlando Magic are probably going to win two more games. You're tied with them now. You're in a great spot. That's your silver lining. You're going to end up with the Portland Trailblazers are going to end up with the fifth best lottery odds. They're going to do it. They're going to do it. After six last year, Damian Lillard said, hey, it's not going to be the same. It's not going to be the same. And guess what? He's right. Last year, they had the sixth worst record in the league. This year, they're going to have the fifth worst record. Dame never lost. All right, so let's talk about the greatest turnarounds in NBA history. Portland, very likely to win something like 33 games, maybe 32 games. So to get back to like a 50-win season and be one of the like good teams that they fancy themselves, they would need to win 18 more games next season, 17 or 18 more games next season. It would be like a historically big turnaround. Speaking of those Kings, they're on pace to do something just like that. So let's talk about these 2023 Sacramento Kings and the greatest turnarounds in NBA history and what all of those teams have in common. Join me in that third segment, won't you? Still a pass first point guard. Still Mike Richmond. Still listening to Locked On Blazers. Let's talk about the greatest turnarounds in NBA history. The Blazers are going to need it. They have promised you that this was the year that they dipped down again. They were going to be the most connected team in the league, even if they weren't the most talented. And then they were going to rise up like the phoenix from so many ashes and become good or whatever. I don't know what the promise is, but yeah, like let's believe for a moment that this team improves from like a 32-33 win team to a 50 win team is the mark of a really good team in the league. There's going to be three in the West maybe that win 50 games. Like, I think the like Spurs Warriors run like kind of warped people idea of what a really good team was because they were winning 60 some games, like the Kawhi late Tim Duncan era Spurs, and then right into the juggernaut Warriors. It's just like, oh yeah, if you win the West, you win 65 games. The Suns did it last year where they set a franchise record with 60 some wins. Like, but 50 wins is like the mark of a really good team. It's the mark of a really good team. So we assume the Blazers are going to win something like 17 more games in the 23-24 season than they did today. What's it going to take? Well, your boy went back to the history books to look at the biggest turnarounds in NBA history. NBA history to find out what are the common denominators for teams that make the biggest jump from kind of crappy to straight up good. Because that's what the Blazers need to do. They need to navigate the kind of crappy to straight up good highway. It is a one-lane road. There is no on-street parking. There's not even streetlights. They don't have sidewalks. It's just you, a soft shoulder, and a prayer. And here's how you navigate it. First, let's look at the present. The Kings last year were 30-52. They're going to win something like 48-50 games this year. They played 74 games. I'm putting them like 5-3 in their final eight. I'm guessing here with the Kings, but something like that. They're going to win something like 18-20 more games than they did a season ago. And what did the Kings do? One, they added an all-star. Like, you trade for Domantas Sabonis, who's a multi-time all-star in the East. He comes West. He's like the third best center in the NBA this year. He's been fantastic. All NBA teams are going to be weird. I think he's the third team All NBA center. Like, I really do. I think it's Jokic and Embiid and then Sabonis, but I believe both Jokic and Embiid are going to have forward positionality, which is super bizarre because the NBA teams need to get rid of positions, period. So maybe both of them would make first team All-NBA, then Sabonis would make second team, whatever it is. Like, he's been the third best center in the league. It's been great. One of the reasons the Kings made a big jump is because they traded last year at the deadline for an all-star center. For a star. They traded for the player that I don't think he's been their best player this season, but he's been because I think Fox has been better than him. But he's, for a lot of the season, you could make a very, very clean argument. You probably still could right now that Domantas Sabonis has been their best player. He's awesome. He's been great. You know, cleanly made the All-Star team. Fox and Fox joined him as well eventually. They also got a new coach. Like, moving on from Luke Walton and Alvin Gentry to Mike Brown was a massive upgrade. You know, I don't think coaching trumps talent, but the idea that coaching couldn't greatly improve a team, like we've just seen a lot of examples of it throughout the years across the league. Some coaches speak the right language for certain players. It's hard to know the inexact science of it, but an upgrade in coaching, adding an all-star, they're going to win, you know, 18 more games. They're going to win a boatload more games this year than they did last year. Not one of the best turnarounds in league history, but it follows a similar pattern for the teams that have made the greatest turnarounds in league history, starting with the 79-80s Boston Celtics. You know what they did? They got rookie Larry Bird. They actually drafted Bird in 78. He went back to Indiana State. They went to the freaking NCAA title game. He was a huge star for Indiana State, played against Magic in the title game, came in and joins a team that was not particularly good, 39 wins, and made them into a 60-win juggernaut. The following year, they get Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale, and they were one of the best teams of the 80s. Like, maybe within a few years, were the put together most talented team of all time, that 85-86 Celtics team. It's like, they got good in a hurry. How'd they get good in a hurry? They drafted an MVP, a guy who was going to win three MVPs in the 80s. They drafted an all-time great player. I don't know where Larry Bird ranks all time, but high at the top, at the top of that list, somewhere probably, it's like, I don't know. I'm not really old enough to truly appreciate Larry Bird, but like somewhere in that top 10. And if you have him outside the top 10, he's like 11 or 12. An all-time great. I think the all-time rankings are a little bit silly, but like, you draft one of the best players to ever play the sport, you can turn your team around 22 more wins than the prior season. In 04-05, the Suns won 33 more games, and they did it by signing an MVP. They added Steve Nash to the roster. Nash had played for the rival Dallas Mavericks and returned to the Suns. And they ripped off a whole bunch of wins and started one of the best runs in the history of the franchise, basically prior until you know the last few seasons, the last three seasons, as good as the Suns have ever been. Shout out to the 93 Suns who made the NBA Finals, but like longevity, the Suns were really good for several years. That was probably their longest sustained stretch of being excellent. Early 90s Suns, very good. No disrespect intended. But how do you go and win 33 more games? You sign a future MVP. Steve Nash was going to win two MVPs in the coming 5 years. He was very good. Like, yeah, that's common denominator. MVP. In 89-90, the San Antonio Spurs won 35 more games than they had won the previous year, and they did it by adding an MVP. What a trick that is. The Admiral David Robinson had been drafted number one overall in 1987. He went and served 2 years in the U.S. Navy, came back after his service, and was the best rookie in the league and launched, you know, what would be a very dominant 10-year run for the Admiral, including later an MVP season in 1994. Like, add an MVP, draft an MVP, draft an all-time great, one of the best players ever. Like, I'm not even going to do where does David Robinson rank. He's the 31st best player of all time. Like, it's all silly. Add an MVP. Incredible as a rookie. They did it again. 10 years later. 97-98 Spurs won 36 more games. Robinson had missed the majority of the previous season with an injury that maybe the Spurs milked a little bit, depending on who you ask. I know that my friends in San Antonio deny that they would ever hold him out, and those outside of the San Antonio area insist that the Spurs invented the tank, because they probably did. But they win the friggin' lottery, third worst record in the league. They win the friggin' lottery. They get Tim Duncan. They win 36 more games than they did the previous season. And the following year, they win the NBA title. They would go on to win more in 03 and 05 and 07 and 2014. It's a pretty good one to land. Tim Duncan had one of the best rookie seasons we've ever seen. Was awesome right away. It's like, I mean, he was Awesome at Wake, shows up, continues to be awesome in the league, a dominant player from basically the moment he stepped on the court. You add a star, an all-time great player, you can win 36 more games. And then the biggest turnaround in league history, plus 42. The 06-07 Celtics were not very good. In fact, they ended up with the fifth pick in the NBA draft, and they traded that pick to the Seattle Supersonics in exchange for Ray Allen, and then a few weeks later, they traded for Kevin Garnett, KG. They started the season something like 28-4. They were incredible right away. I think they started the season 33-3. They were wild. Ended up winning 66 games. That is in my notebook. Ended up winning 66 games, 42 more than the season before. You add, you know, Paul Pierce, Hall of Famer, but you add Hall of Famer Ray Allen. You add a former MVP to, you know, 04 MVP, whatever, three seasons removed from being maybe the best player in the league in Kevin Garnett. And, you know, you just rip off 66 wins. You beat LeBron James and then Kobe Bryant and win the NBA title. You would get back again in 2010 and lose one. Like, this was what launched the run. So what do the Blazers need to do to propel themselves into the upper echelon? Well, it seems pretty simple to me. They need to add a most valuable player. Like Nash or Bird or the Admiral. Or the big fundamental, or the big ticket. Or set your sights a little lower and add Domantas Sabonis. There is no way the Blazers take a massive step forward from this year to next year without a huge, huge influx in talent. This isn't like, you can explain away this season in a lot of ways, but they missed Justice Winslow. But Justice Winslow ain't the difference between this team being in that upper crust of teams that are really competitive. They had some bad injury luck. They didn't really get their whole group together for any significant period of time. But some bad injury luck to Jerami Grant and Anthony Simons and then early to Damian Lillard, that is not the difference between this team being good and bad. There are simple explanations for why they aren't a little bit better. But the jump they need to make that would be akin to what the Sacramento Kings did this season involves adding all-star level talent. All-star level talent. This summer, the challenge is to follow that path. I think asking them to add, you know, the Birds and David Robinsons and Tim Duncan is like silly, right? Obviously, there's a French teenager that would change the direction of the franchise a great deal if they get the number one pick in the NBA draft. Certainly. Do that one. fill in that circle on your Scantron. But short of that, because that's out of your control, right? It's lottery odds. Fifth best lottery odds, though, baby. Something like 40% chance to get a top four pick. Short of that, it is, if this team is going to take the jump, you got to add all-star level talent. All-star level talent. The teams that have taken the biggest jumps in the league's history have all followed one thing, a massive, massive injection of talent. Either a future MVP in the form of a rookie or trading for a star, or in the Suns' case, signing a dude who was about to launch one heck of a post-29-year-old run in his career. To get good, you got to add really good players. You already knew that, but I wanted to paint a picture for what the most massive turnarounds in NBA history looks like, because if the Blazers get where they want to go, it's going to take a historic turnaround, one of the greatest ones we've seen from this franchise, and certainly matching some of the best we've ever seen. They might not need to win 42 more games. They're not going to need to win 74 or whatever next season, but if they want to do something like the Kings have done, the path is right there for them. You need to add all-star. That's how you get really good. Seems obvious to me. Now, very simple, but it seems like that's the path. Thanks for listening to the program. We'll do some more. Got a fun interview for lined up for tomorrow's show that you are listening to Tuesday, March 28th show. And on Wednesday, a fun interview that I haven't confirmed yet, so I'm not going to float their name in case they got to reschedule. But look for it in your feeds. Super duper fun. You're going to enjoy it. I know I am looking forward to it. Come back for Wednesday's show to check that one out. Thursday's show, we'll recap that first game against the Kings. Friday, we're going to have some more fun. We'll probably do a mailbag. Send your questions in to lockedonblazerspod@gmail.com. I appreciate you listening. I'll talk to you soon.